and asking you in the audience to help contribute to the talk tonight at 7:30. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to Todd for visiting us at KBOO, and to all of you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Women's Reproductive Rights Now on Sunday, October 14th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Sunnyside Community House, located at 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. Women's Reproductive Rights Now is an educational event to support activists fighting for reproductive rights. Speakers include Judith Arcana, Dr. Patricia Kohlberg, Reverend Emily Champagne, and Sally Castillo of Planned Parenthood. There will also be videos, tabling, food, and more. Again, that's Women's Reproductive Rights Now on Sunday, October 14th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts scene. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today we are doing a preview of the upcoming Portland Film Festival, which is coming to town October 22nd to 28th. We are joined in the studio once again by Portland Film Festival director Josh Leek. Josh, it's always good to see you.
Hey, Conch. Always love coming to KBOO, one of my favorites.
And you've brought some filmmakers with you today. Jocelyn Edelstein is the director of the feature documentary Believe the Beat. Kathy Zoitlin is the director of the documentary Living While Dying. Tamir Rawlings is the director of the narrative feature Little Star. And Brett Eichenberger's film is called Pretty Broken. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting. So, Josh, give us a quick overview. The circus is coming to town. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, well, our tagline this year is independent film is coming to Portland. And really, what is independent film? A lot of times people go to the movie theater and they got four choices. You can go see a superhero movie, you can see a romantic comedy, maybe you can see a kid's movie. And that's not really all the type of movies that are out there. And unfortunately, Portland is really moving to a really studio-driven environment where you're not able to see very many or hear very many independent voices. And for us, it's so important, especially in today's political and climate, to like hear voices from people that don't necessarily look like ourselves. And I think there are a lot of amazing things that our festival is doing to bring independent voices to Portland. And I've got a quote for you. We're going to screen more independent films at our festival between October 22nd and 28th than any theater in the city does all year.
So you have a real outreach program with the festival. You make sure that there's representation on a really broad scale.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of festivals in town that are great, and I love and go to all of them and support them. Definitely go to and support all the festivals. You know, but one thing we really enjoy is not really pigeonholing our films. We don't just want to see science fiction films. We don't just want to see issue documentaries that are very important. We like them all. And we think that people should have the opportunity to see different types of movies, not just a superhero movie. And what we do is we open up our submissions to everyone around the world. This year we had somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 films submitted. We're going to screen 207 films. And here's something pretty shocking. And in fact, I told the other filmmakers here about this, and they were surprised. We have 207 films screening during the week of the festival. And only 7 of those films won't be represented by either directors, cast, and crew, which is, and usually we get somewhere between 2 and 8 crew and cast members per film to come. So we can have anywhere between, you know, 300, 400 and 1,800 people showing up just to support their films here in Portland. And that's a lot of creatives.
And not to, you know, not to poo-poo any of the directors here, but you also are a big believer in having other crew members, other talented people come out, cinematographers, lighting people, casting directors, you know, other people who work behind the scenes and maybe don't get the big splashy credits. But they come out here and they have workshops, they have panels. There's a lot of interesting give and take going on.
You're right. And it's always, you know, I was just having a great conversation with a friend of mine recently, and we were talking about how some of the other film organizations in town have started to use a lot of our instructors. And it's such a good feeling to see the community really, you know, take a hold of our event. You know, a lot of our instructors that come into town and do workshops, you know, for example, if you've ever seen the movie Limitless, Children with No Men, so many different films. These screenwriters are coming, cinematographers are coming. I mean, last year we had the director from so many different films. I think we had Batman represented, which, you know, not everyone really likes. But we had Gremlins. I couldn't think of it. Who could forget Gremlins? We had Joe Dante came to our festival last year and sat down and talked with new directors and some of our screen directors. It was a really humbling and amazing experience. And this year we have so many cool workshops going on. And, you know, if you're interested in getting into film or if you're already in film and you want to learn more, this is the place to go. You know, we're flying in the head of the Lincoln Film Center in New York, which has a small film festival called the New York Film Festival. New York Times just wrote an amazing article about her and her event. She's coming in as a jury member. We have the head of the Academy East Coast, so number 4 from the Oscars, is going to be in town for our festival watching our filmmakers here. I mean, we've got a lot of talent. Aisha Tyler's coming back. We've got a lot of Steve Guttenberg, opening night film, Cloris Leachman, Hilary Swank just submitted a new film with us. Rosamund Pike from Gone Girl has a film that just came out of Toronto that we're going to be playing. And I think one of the best honors we have is we have the winning film from the Berliana, which hasn't played in Oregon at all at our festival, which is pretty cool. It's in competition. As a Portlander and as a Portland filmmaker, one of the cool things I'm really excited about is every day of the festival, we're screening 1 to 2 Portland films. We got over 40 films we're screening from Portland, both short and feature.
It's great to see like so much going on with crews building and working in this town. And I do want to talk with some of the filmmakers that we have in the studio. But first, what I want to do is I want to get a little clip from the feature film Pretty Broken by Brett Eichenberger. Let's listen to a bit of that and let's talk with Brett and some of the other folks here.
We're talking Gore-Tex tents, sleeping equipment, layered seasonal clothing. That's huge. The temps are going to suck. Then you got your oxygen bottles, masks, regulators, medical kit, rescue insurance, satellite phones, and then a bunch of other stuff that I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I'll probably need a scarf, too.
How many people are on your team?
No one yet so far, just me.
I've been climbing for the past 10 years. I don't recognize you from any climbs, you Lazama.
No, I went to outdoor school like in 7th grade. I mean, we went on a hike, it was uphill. Do you have any mittens that are cheaper? These are like $30.
For like the basic gear alone, you're looking at like $4,000, and that's like bare minimum stuff. Like, if you're serious, you better consider getting a guide.
You want to go climb Everest?
It's a little out of my league, but I do know a guy. Here you go, that guy. Oh, yeah, it's tragic. Local climber used to come in all the time.
That's my dad.
Oh, whoa. I'm so sorry.
Thanks.
I'd love to hear stories sometime if you wanted to come in and tell a story.
Yeah, maybe later. Scoop.
Oh, it's Scott. I lost a bet. Damn it. We're talking Gore-Tex tents, sleeping equipment, layered seasonal clothing. That's
and
huge.
That was a clip from the feature Pretty Broken, directed by Brett Eichenberger. Brett, tell us about this film. Sounds kind of intense.
So, yeah, it's a dramedy. It's kind of a family dramedy. And it's about a young woman whose father goes missing on a mountaineering expedition, and she's determined to bring him home, only she's the least qualified to do so. So the clip that we just listened to is her venturing into a mountain shop, which is the mountain shop that we shot here in Portland that used to be the old 7-Up Tower. And she goes in there thinking that she's just going to get a bunch of stuff and she's going to head off to Everest. It's not quite that easy as she's finding out.
Now, this is all a Portland crew, or did you bring people from out of town?
So this is an all-Portland crew. We did bring some actors up from Los Angeles. However, the majority of those actors were born in Oregon, which is kind of cool. A lot of them have been living in Los Angeles for a number of years. The star of our film, Jillian Clare, was actually born in Portland and moved down to Los Angeles when she was about 5. Her father, Peter Holden, has been in a ton of movies, and he's been down in L.A. for maybe 20, 25 years. And then Preston Bailey, who plays the little brother, was also born in Oregon, and he's been a star. And in fact, he played Dexter's son on the series Dexter, and he's been in L.A. since he's been a little kid. So it's the majority of the film is an Oregon crew and Oregon cast.
So, you know, having worked in the in the biz myself, in the production field myself, it can be kind of a small kind of circle here in Portland. Mm-hmm. You've been working in the scene for a while. You've made friends. You've made people who are really ready to come up and help you out because you've helped other people out.
That's exactly right. That's part of low budget filmmaking. Is you do some favors for other folks and you cash in those favors when the time is right.
You're listening to the To Words and Pictures. I want to let you know I'm SW Conser, and we're here talking about the Portland Film Festival, doing a bit of a preview with Brett Eichenberger, with Jocelyn Edelstein, Kathy Zoitlin, and Tamer Rawlings. And want to talk with Jocelyn Edelstein for a while because I've heard about this documentary you've done, this feature documentary, Believe the Beat. This is going to come up towards the end of the month. What can you tell us about this film that you're finally getting out there? It's gotten a lot of buzz.
Yeah, so Believe the Beat is my feature-length documentary, and it's basically been a journey of a decade plus following the artistic evolution of a group of Brazilian street dancers from Rio de Janeiro. And the documentary itself features that evolution parallel to my evolution as a filmmaker. So there's a bit of my own narrative in there. But yeah, if you enjoy a good coming-of-age rites of passage story, if you enjoy watching some incredible dance, these are just a group of phenomenal hip-hop dancers and a really strong, wise community of individuals as well. So that'll be screening October 25th at 8:15 p.m. and October 28th at 4:15 p.m. at the Portland Film Fest.
Now, what sparked the idea of doing this documentary? Did you meet these folks first, or did you decide, I want to go, this is a topic that interests me. I want to go out and look for a group like this.
Yeah, I started out as a dancer, and I was pretty young. I was 22. And I was very interested in storytelling and lots of different mediums. But I was living in Brazil for a year on a college grant and did stumble upon this group of dancers and was pretty wowed by just their passion and their power. And I ended up hanging out with them and training with them as a dancer first, and then really quickly got the impulse to pick up a camera. And that really initiated my journey into filmmaking, which continued over the next decade as I noticed that their careers were growing and that the power of the community support that they offered each other had really created paths in their life to move forward.
So you started out with early footage, and it just kept developing. You ended up getting more and more footage, and the narrative kind of built itself.
Exactly. And then, you know, as it works in independent filmmaking, you start out like pretty ragtag with either yourself or a very small crew of devoted individuals, and then eventually sometimes you get lucky enough to get bigger production support. And so a really wonderful production company in Brazil came on board, as well as the support of Social Construct Films here in the States, and they helped me kind of carry it across the finish line the last couple years with a slightly bigger crew.
So one of the things that people in the industry talk about is how important sound is, and also how difficult sound is when you're doing a documentary, how difficult it is to get in there and get the best sound. But it's especially important for a music and dance centered documentary.
Absolutely, yeah. And sound was a real beast for me. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing when I first started, which was part of the beauty of this kind of, you know, story that tells the co-evolution of two different sets of artists, right? A filmmaker and a group of dancers. But yeah, you know, the interesting thing too is you deal with licensing. So a lot of the initial footage that I had of these dancers dancing to their favorite, you know, hit pop songs was footage that we had to be really crafty with later, which is why you need a great sound designer and a great composer, you know. And I ended up having a fantastic composer, Rodrigo Lima, out of Brazil, that was able to create and cover tracks that we couldn't use, and then some beautiful sound designers that mixed that into the ambiance of the moment.
So your film, I believe The Beat, is this a premiere at the Portland Film Festival?
It's not its premiere. Its premiere was at the Hip Hop Film Festival in New York.
Okay. But, and are you taking it to Brazil?
We have been to Brazil already, and we'll hopefully go back again at some point in the near future.
Well, great. Okay. Another feature we want to talk about, this is a narrative feature, is Tamer Rawlings' feature Little Star. Tamer, tell us the story behind this.
So this was a sort of an elaborate home movie, kind of like what Brett and Jocelyn were talking about, kind of this like independent effort for sure, kind of working with what you have. We started with a truck and a small child and her dad.
Sounds like an improv exercise. Give me a truck, give me a small child.
Exactly. And we kind of roped them all into this kind of a like road trippy sort of Amber Alert situation story that's very far from like the reality that we were working with these non-actors and these places and kind of making our own little fiction, you know, in this, like, my hometown, essentially. So it was kind of a cool, like, coming together of all these different resources and family and friends. And
now, is this your first feature? Have you done shorts before?
This was the first feature. It actually started off as more of a short, which was my experience up to that point, mostly film school. My thesis film was a short film and some music videos and things, so it was kind of interesting to like really commit and start doing a longer form story, you know.
So music videos, you know, people kind of don't look at music videos as this huge thing like it was back in, say, the late 20th century, but it is kind of a staple of the web these days. So what sort of work have you done on that side of things?
Well, I've been interested in music. I'm a musician myself, so I've always kind of been drawn to doing things that involve music for sure. So Little Star has a lot of music by the Mountain Man. It's three women, but they're called Mountain Man, singular. And the Delta Bombers, and so it's kind of the same outreach, like finding artists that you think you might be able to reach through Facebook or something, and the like handful of them that do get back to you, you start some kind of a back and forth, and then they let you use your their song, and you make a little video for it, and hopefully, you know, do them justice. And I did one in Portland for a band called Born a Lot, who's it's a friend of mine. His metal band was very different for me.
So we mentioned that Little Star is a road movie, and is that something you think you'll do again? I mean, it's got to be taxing on your crew when you're looking out for the weather, you're looking out for the right circumstances, and there's a lot of random things that can happen on the road.
Yeah, we got rained on. We filmed in an abandoned kind of shed, like condemned home, I'm pretty sure.
No permits, I'm assuming.
Our lead actor, yeah. Well, we got permission to shoot in there, but I don't. Yeah, it was not OSHA. Say, I'm pretty sure we got some infections and some respiratory issues, but we got a great couple scenes.
So this is coming up. Little Star is coming up at the Portland Film Festival. I want to do one more clip here. We're going to be talking with Kathy Zoitlin. Oh, before we do that, though, I just want to mention SW Concert. The show is Words and Pictures. And Josh Leek is, again, the director of the Portland Film Festival. And Josh, you had something to say.
Thanks, Conch. Yeah, I just want to let everyone know they can go online at portlandfilm.org and click on the schedule, and they can buy tickets for any of our films that we're talking about today, or any of the other 207 films we're screening. One other note is every day of the festival, we're doing a free lunch at Powell's.
That's right. There, I thought there was no such thing as a free lunch.
At Powell's, okay. And all the directors that are screening that day will be talking about their movies. And I have something that's also really cool. Our opening night on Tuesday, we have an Oregon director playing a film called The Chunta. Go online to find out more about that film. But we have a celebrity that's going to be doing the introduction and Q&A at Powell's on Tuesday.
This is a mystery celebrity?
Very well known. Okay. So well known that we can't actually put it out there.
Do you have to have a bag on his head or what?
No, but we need security. Okay. So it's going to be a fun experience. Everyone's welcome to go. Every day of the festival, it's free, starting on Tuesday, opening night of the films. Happens from 11:30 at 1 at Powell's.
All right.
And that was, of course, put together by our huge supporting sponsor, which is NBC Universal Comcast. They did a really great job this year. In fact, they're also flying up Universal's head archivist, and he's going to do a talk on monster movies, which is really appropriate because it's the Halloween time.
Yes, it is.
And they even gave us, I just got an email today with over 50 behind-the-scenes photos that have never been seen before of original monster movies like Dracula, Frankenstein, and we're going to be having those available for the public to come see at our venue for free during the whole week, and that, of course, will be at the Custom Blocks, which is at Southeast 10th and Main.
All right. With that all in mind, let's see if we can play this very brief clip by Kathy Zoitlin from her documentary, Living While Dying.
So the randomness of death and the accidentalness of it, it's coming for you. And it doesn't matter whether you're old or young. You know, I really have to live fully because I don't know when my death will come. It's certain, but the time is uncertain. Some people will die in fear. Some people will die without fear. But the next step on that progression is to die with grace. And when you share the journey of someone dying with grace, it gives you the realization that that's the only way to go when someone sets you that example.
Quick clip there from Living While Dying, the documentary by Kathy Zoitlin. Kathy, that sounds like a very heavy subject there. How did you go about filming this?
I filmed friends of mine who had terminal illnesses, and I walked beside them while they were in that last phase of living, and all of my friends were so involved with living, and it was this major lesson to me about living while dying, where, you know, the title of the film, that it was a call to life. It was a call to making the most out of life, because as you just heard in the clip, death is very random, and you don't know when it's coming. And so You have to make the most out of every day.
I think, you know, what seems to be a common thread going through everybody here is that the film was almost secondary. It's not like, I want to go out and make a film, but more like, here is this amazing thing that's happening in my circle here. And so you kind of picked up a camera. And
indeed, that's exactly what happened. This film is a calling for me. I had no intention to go out and make a film on this particular topic, but I had curiosity. I had a lot of curiosity. I'm in my 60s, and death has been a taboo subject, and nobody talks about it. And in my family, both of my parents are still alive, so I hadn't had that up-close experience, even though I have to say I did have a friend of mine go through hospice in my house. I hadn't had the cultural experience of talking about death and dying. And when my mom's partner got a terminal illness, I just said, hey, Claire, do you mind if I bring a camera while you're in hospice? And Claire said, are you kidding? I would love it. Bring your camera. Wow. I'm a Leo. And that just got the ball rolling.
Well, you know, we've had Peter Richardson, the director of How to Die in Oregon, on years ago on the show. And one of the things that's a big issue is how do you go in there? Not only, you know, usually it's the person who's dying is okay with this camera, the mics, at least to a certain extent. But oftentimes it's the people around, the people in the hospital industry, the people in the hospice, who are the most squeamish about that.
The people I filmed all chose to have hospice at home. So there wasn't a hospital environment that I had to deal with. However, in one case where it was a good friend of mine, and I was out of town, and I got a message, and he said, Kathy, I want you to come and film me, and I want you to have carte blanche. I want you to come in my house anytime. He didn't tell his family that he had told that to me. So the first time I showed up with my camera and the family was all there, there was a little bit of like, what is she doing here? And I quickly made a documentary of them to show to them what I was doing there and won their hearts. And then it was all fine.
And do you expect to have some of the family members at the festival screening that's coming up?
No, I don't think they'll be okay at this screening.
So what is next for you? I mean, this sounds like a really big project that you've done. Are you taking this to other festivals? Have you got anything else under your belt?
Well, I've been taking it on the road, and it turns out to be community organizing, because educating about the end of life is something that's important and starting to bubble up in the grassroots. And so I'm finding communities where there are death educators, end-of-life educators, and doing a lot of screenings in a lot of different places.
Well, that is Living While Dying, the documentary by Kathy Zoetlin. And Josh Leek, quickly, how do listeners find out more about this year's Portland Film Festival?
Portlandfilm.org. And I think you really left that with a wonderful saying that, you know, life is so short. Get out there and do something. And during the week of October 22nd and 28th, go to the Portland Film Festival.
Well, I really want to thank all our guests today, filmmakers Brett Eichenberger, Jocelyn Edelstein, Kathy Zoetlin, and Tamir Roylings, and also, you know, Portland Film Festival director Josh Leek. Always great to see you again. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Conch.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, KBOO.
Well, you've been listening to, KBOO, you know, we get the word out, and one of the reasons maybe why we've got such a great culture as far as the film community goes, it's a big part of intersectional culture with radio, with TV, with film, with music.
You know, it's funny, actually, your station director helped our Boys and Girls Club Future Filmmakers program.
Our public affairs director.
Yeah, Derek, and he has a film that's going to be screened at the festival on Saturday, so super excited.
Fantastic. October 22nd to 28th is the Portland Film Festival. You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, SW Conser. Many thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.fm. You can find an archived version of this show later today at KBOO.fm/Words and Pictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. I'm here. You're there.
The time is 12 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
It's time for the KBOO News at noon for Thursday, October 11th, 2018. In local news, U.S. Senator for Oregon Ron Wyden has for the first time praised a Trump administration appointee. Wyden has been critical of most of the current appointees, from Scott Pruitt in the EPA to his replacement Andrew Wheeler, both of whom are skeptical of the international scientific consensus on climate change. This time, however, a former wildland firefighter has been assigned to head the U.S. Forest Service, a move which Wyden says is good news for Oregon. Vicky Christensen has been running the agency since early March, when Tony Took resigned amid a sexual misconduct investigation. Yesterday's announcement made her appointment permanent. Hurricane Michael has finally begun to weaken, a day after making landfall along the Florida Panhandle. The eye of Hurricane Michael came on shore in Florida near Mexico Beach early Wednesday afternoon as a devastating Category 4 storm, which sustained winds of 155 miles per hour. It was the strongest storm on record to hit the Florida Panhandle and the strongest storm categorized by pressure to hit the U.S. since Camille in 1969. Early images of coastal areas in Florida show communities that have been disseminated by the fierce winds and storm surge. Videos from Mexico Beach, where the storm made landfall, show the seaside town virtually underwater. The hurricane has gone through Georgia and is now making its way through North